Hello and welcome to the Popcorn Junkies.
Is that better?
I thought that was my t-shirt.
It is, but I've just cut the neck because it was too tight.
You're so fucking annoying. Can you not do that to any more of my kit?
I just got the kitchen scissors out, just cut it.
Well, yeah, that's fine when it's your own top, but not when it's someone else's.
This was in a throw-out, probably.
It wasn't in a throw-out. Oh, it was actually, yeah. No, you're right. Okay, sorry about that. That's totally boring. We'll cut all that out. we're back. Welcome to the Popcorn Junkies. We're reviewing Back to Black, which is the new biopic of Amy Winehouse. And I just want to quote Reese Roberts, one of our followers, who said, he's been waiting for this review like a new release of an album. He said there's a sort of expectation and excitement around the release of this. So I hope we deliver, Reese.
And is that partly because he knows just what an insane fan?
Well, he knows it, absolutely.
He knows Amy inside out.
Yeah, Maddie is a huge fan. My only understanding of Amy Winehouse was through the documentary Amy. I had zero comprehension of her before the documentary by Asif Kapadia. And I think all of us were kind of thrown into the Amy sort of story, weren't we, by that film.
Oh my God.
To be fair, like, it was after seeing the documentary that I properly fell in love with her.
Yeah.
Like, I liked her music before the documentary. Mm. I liked her look.
Yes.
I was like inspired by her as
an artist.
As an artist. Mm. But like after the documentary is when I like was obsessed.
Yeah. Fell madly and deeply in love.
Yeah.
I think I was surprised and shocked by how we all saw the, because we were all on holiday together, weren't we, when she died. I
mean, Butlins.
Butlins. Don't even ask. I mean, it's about as rock and roll as things don't get.
It's
true, you were drunk in bed with disco lights. My God. Yeah, babe, that was an odd moment for you. I don't think you were very happy.
We went to a water park and we came back and Mum was drunk on the bed and like just
disco
around
lights.
The head. But yeah, there were these disco lights. The menopause.
Yeah, I think so. So when she died, she was very much. But again, we were at a time, even us, where we didn't think about how the paparazzi. I mean, we'd had the Princess Diana thing, but we weren't sort of as conscious as we are now about how people's lives are totally torn apart by the press and how paparazzi.
It's amazing
destroy.
How unconscious.
Unconscious,
we were.
That's it.
Yeah, because we just used to look at people, didn't we? Now you feel dirty when you look on things like that.
Yeah.
You do.
And I think there was an expectation with Amy Winehouse. I know there was, where people were just waiting for the inevitable to happen. It felt like the car crash was coming, and everyone was kind of just waiting for it to happen, which is just awful when you look back. Anyway. So this film lands from Sam Taylor Johnson as the director. It has the sort of agreement and sanctioning of Amy Winehouse's family, though there's been a lot of effort in the pre-publicity to say it's not about permissions. It wasn't that, you know, but they had to because they got access to her music, her back catalogue. It stars a relative newcomer, Marisa Abella. She was in a series called Industry. It stars Jack O'Connell. You're a big fan. Yeah, you're big fans of. And it's got other notables in there. Eddie Marson playing her dad. Jack O'Connell obviously plays Blair, her boyfriend.
Blake.
Or husband. Blake, sorry, Blair. Blair Witch Program. And Leslie Manville, who plays her nan. And Juliet Cohen, who we know, who plays her mum. And so the first thing I'm going to say before I ask you what you think of it, they call it a biopic. It's been described as a biopic. But actually, to be fair to the filmmakers, they've always said that this is a film about her life through the lens of her album. Back to Black, both through the lens of the words, through the lens of the lyrics, through the lens of the music, and through the lens of how she saw her life in the way that she wrote that music. And I think it's really important just to stress that at the front, because...
Are they imagined? Because very presumptuous to say how she thought about her life. Because when I saw the screenwriter said that, I looked everywhere to see if they were great friends, but he didn't know her.
Yeah,
he said, I thought a bit about how Amy might want this to be, and then I did it that way. It's like, well, how can you know that?
When you didn't know her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So weird.
Yes, it is odd. But I think...
Like, she's the only person that could tell us how what she thought of the album through her eyes.
Yeah, or something extremely close to her might have been able to.
But I think what they're driving at here is, it's a kind of get-out-of-jail card for the fact that, as we're about to discuss, the portrayal, say, of people like Blake and her father and her life, where we feel perhaps it wasn't as accurate as we would have liked it in terms of a raw portrait of her life, how rawly was she viewing her own life? You know, would she have been seeing herself as this kind of, you know, drug addict, you know, addicted kind of mess in the way
genius.
Exactly.
Smart, witty, young woman.
I just want to be fair, because the one thing I hate about, you know, film reviewers or anyone is when people come, they prejudge something and they come in hard. We went to see this, and me and Maddie went to see it together. You saw it with Lisa and Kiki. And I said right at the front, I said, it's really important that we just kind of shake ourselves down and go, right, let's give this a fair crack of the world.
I didn't. I went in saying to Lisa, God, we're going to hate this. This is all shit. That's exactly what I said as we sat, because Lisa said, oh, I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, right.
I was going to be terrible.
Well, I hate biopics anyway. I mean, it's really hard for me. I mean, the last one I saw was Bob Marley, and it was just like, oh, come on, guys, it's so saccharine, it's so, you know, and it's an opportunity to sell
music.
It's one of
those things that when you really, like, sit and think about them, biopics are just, it's just a weird thing to do for me.
Yeah.
Like, just make a film out of somebody that's, because also with Amy, she's not even been dead 20 years yet, and you're making a biopic out of her.
And that is a big thing for a lot of the fans of Amy, isn't it? There's been a lot of backlash about how soon this has been made, is that right?
Yeah.
And I don't remember there being the same sort of backlash when the documentary was made.
I think there was.
In terms of it being too soon?
Some people, yeah. There was.
Well, okay, to give the backstory again, I mean, I've got my theories on why this was made and how this was made and the reasons why it's been made so soon. You know, Amy, the documentary, I think, did an incredibly, you know, honest job of portraying the complications of her life and the raw kind of things that went into her creativity. Her creativity, her music, her lyrics, everything. It was incredibly, you know, visceral, wasn't it? And it was real. And we all came out thinking, my God, she's this and that and the other. This, from the get-go, is romantic portrait, I felt, of Amy Winehouse. And I don't mean romantic in a good way. I mean, this is sugar-coated, soft-focused.
Years ago, I interviewed her very, very close friend, Tyler. You knew Tyler. He lived with her from eight. They met at Stage Call when they were 12.
Yeah, he was in it for like
2 years. Yeah, it was.
And then he moved in with her at 18, and they lived together till she died. And he's been sober for a very long time now and stuff. And anyway, he watched the film and I read this interview with him and he was crying on and off through the interview.
Oh, I saw this, yeah.
Yeah, and he said that it should have been called a fantasy biopic. And actually, I think that's right. Because that's what I was kind of getting at when I was saying, how can the screenwriter say, through her eyes? It went in her eyes, you don't know. I think if they'd labelled it a fantasy, an imagined biopic, They would have got away with it. But I think, like, I watched it with a friend of mine who doesn't know all the stuff that we know about Amy and hadn't seen the documentary. And she just thought, oh, yeah, this is lovely. And, yeah, she enjoyed it for what it was. But it was kind of frustrating watching it with her because she felt he wanted to, like, fill in all the gaps of what we know about her. And that's what Tyler said. He said, you know, so much of it was just wrong.
It's not something we should be able to come out of and go, oh, that was lovely, wasn't it? Like, that's not how we should be coming out of a biopic of Amy Winehouse's life. I think even if their argument is that they're doing it, like painting through her eyes on what she thought of it or whatever, I don't think she would have she never glamorised her life.
Right.
She kind of fully embraced the darkness. At least this, obviously, I don't know Amy Winehouse either.
Yeah.
But this is just from being a massive fan and watching pretty much every interview with her,
video there is of her. It's not first you've ever seen, is there?
Yeah, from that, she's always been, was very honest about, and weirdly, like, self-aware of the chaos going on in her life. And she did, to a certain extent, kind of seek the darker points in her life.
Right,
for her music and everything. Yeah. I think how he's portrayed in her music isn't just as this little cheeky geezer.
Right.
I think he's also portrayed in her music as somebody that really, really broke her heart. And messed her up. And I don't think the argument being, oh, we did this through the lens of the album Back to Black, I don't think that's a good enough argument because it wasn't through the lens of Back to Black at all.
It was just
a fantasy biopic. Like, that's what they
That's interesting. So even by their own standard of trying to kind of, sort of, they're trying to position themselves, I think, the filmmakers behind the idea of this is the kind of romantic vision she...
But they're calling it a biopic.
Well, no, I know, exactly. They're wanting their cake and eat it. Yeah.
I would say she was a dark romantic. It wasn't a sunshine and rainbows romance type person.
No. I mean, I was always struck by her, by the fact that she was this, like, incredibly independent, ferociously safe in who she was, sort of woman, and she would tell anybody anything. And I loved, like, you've shown me so many interviews with her, where I just love the way she's answered people when they're just like, when they've asked such a stupid fucking question. But I was always struck by how much she used to also play baby girl. Like, she used to also do this, like, little baby girl thing, didn't she? And she wanted to be, like, a little wife, and she wanted to be... But I don't think that was essentially who she was. It was just like a little part of her fright stuff. And for me, the whole sort of front part of the movie was her, like,
she was just made quite sweet.
Well, I'm going to be more blunt than that. When we got to the first scene and we were at her father's family, and it was a family party, family get together, and we get a chance to see Mitch, you know, he's a bit of a one, he likes to sing, he's a crooner and all that kind of stuff. And then when she walked into the room and started to sing, Maddie had to physically restrain me because I wanted to run for the door and leg it through London, screaming.
I was sinking down into my seat.
It was the most hideously
cringe,
awful moment where I thought, I can't do 2 hours of this for the sake of the actress. Because at that point, I thought everything that was my worst fear that I've sought to leave at the door was crystallised in a moment that felt so badly directed.
Mm.
So it landed so badly.
Yeah, so bad.
Her voice felt odd. It felt odd. And then
really strange.
And here's the deepest irony of the whole film. The one moment where any artist is lip syncing is Eddie Marson in that scene. He wasn't singing in that scene. He either sang it somewhere else or someone else sang it, and they put the bloody voice on him.
I don't think she was in that scene either. That first scene
was ghastly.
And we should make the point that she does sing. It's not Amy's voice. I think a lot of people think they're going to hear Amy's
voice. Another problem I had with the film, yes, she sings, it's the actress singing throughout it, but every so often when there was like, say when it was in the pub with the snooker table with Blake, when her song would be playing in the background, it was actually Amy Winehouse's voice. And it's like, why would you put in Amy's, like, unfair on the actress, why would you put in here and there Amy's actual singing voice and then have her sing? And sorry, for me, sound absolutely nothing like her, really.
Right.
I think you either go full force with having her mime and have Amy's voice over the top, or you only have her singing for Amy. It was really weird how every now and then it would be actually Amy's song.
The thing about Amy...
That's just showing her up, like, it's exposing how different her voice is.
Yes.
And she was a totally unique person. There was no other person that was even vaguely like Amy Winehouse. And also with her voice.
Yes.
So it does. And actually, Tyler in this interview, Amy's best friend, said, "Why would you not use her voice?"
It's everything we've been saying all along.
It to me, it was insane. Now, I just do want to say, I think the actress worked her arse off, and I think she's a good actress, and I think she did a lot that was great. I would hate this to be a bashing of the actress.
Oh, no, we haven't got to that.
And she owned the screen, actually, in a way I wasn't expecting from other things I'd heard and clips. But I think she was being done a disservice by the screenplay and by the direction.
Yeah, I agree.
I entirely agree.
I think the hate she's gotten is unfair. It's like so every people, all of people's problems with the movie has just been pinned on the actress, which I think is really.
And that was always my fear when I saw that clip that they dropped. You know, the Ronnie Scott's clip. My line on all of this was: I'm really worried. I'm not an enormous fan of Sam Taylor Johnson, the director. I'm not a fan of the biopic. I'm not a fan of the biopic genre. But even with all of that said, well, what I will say on that quickly is it wasn't as badly made as I thought it was going to be. It wasn't as mishandled as I thought it was going to be. I actually thought once Maddie had made sure I'd stayed in my seat after that first scene, I thought she got progressively better and better and better throughout the film. And I actually think she was actually really, really good. I thought it was an impossible task she was given.
Oh my God.
Actually think that the director...
It's a voice and chalice, that
task. Totally, totally. And I think the director, my fear with all of it was the director could have really helped her out more by allowing her the freedom to mime, removing that huge burden of responsibility and then comparison, and she could have just even spent more time on all of the kind of other stuff, because she spent 3 months just trying to get her voice right. I mean, all that time for a likeness. And I mean,
is there a load of ego put in there from the director?
We
took 3 months to get her voice. It's a real disservice to Amy. Because you're not going to take anyone in 3 months and get Amy's voice.
But there's one moment pretty much straight after. It's the next time she sings, where I was saying to you yesterday about this. There's a shot where she's in her bedroom.
Yeah, which is, what is a Batman song?
Yeah. And I thought, whatever the tone of her voice was, however well, that was an incredibly difficult sequence to shoot. It was one take, one dolly. She's essentially feeling her way around the discovery of her own lyrics. And then she has to get the mistake and the stumble at the right. Now, all of the technicalities of performing that shot. At that point, that was actually a really key scene for me, because for me, I immediately felt like I was in care. I thought, this girl's looking after herself in this. She's looking after herself within the film, the actress, as opposed to the director looking after.
So where we are so far with what we're saying, would we have been more accepting if it had been called a fantasy? Is the real problem here that we... All of us as Amy fans of different varying degrees.
No, that's not just the problem.
No, that's not the only problem I had with it.
It's one of the problems, but it's not the problem.
But I think
even as a fantasy biopic, even then, one, I just don't think a fantasy biopic out of her should be made. What I think is, I just think that the film shouldn't be made. I don't even think it's a case of too soon. I personally found it like... Oh, no, I think it's too soon, but I don't think that's like just the case. Obviously, I know that like... A lot of her like close family and friends have been involved in this, apparently.
Friends, apparently, Tyler says.
Well, here we go. I thought it was a really disrespectful portrayal of her personally.
Yeah.
I think she was made out to seem like a mad woman for no good reason.
Tyler said the most outrageous thing was it was saying that she got into first class A drugs before he.
Well, this is what Manny pointed out straight away.
She was the only addict.
Well, no, we knew he was doing drugs because there's a whole scene when he's doing drugs at her house and she says no to them. But the whole thing about it is like, and it, see the Amy documentary, because in the Amy documentary, Blake is interviewed and he says it himself, I introduced Amy Winehouse to crack cocaine and heroin.
Yeah.
He did it, and yeah. he knows that, and he's owned that. So why on earth, in this film, would you make Shock it seem him. Like she went and got crack herself and then yeah. did it again?
Shock him.
But I would also go even further than that and then actually do what I thought was a really devilish sleight of hand, where they had a moment where he gave her a crack pipe, later in the story when they're in Miami getting married. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's so they can cover all bases. I tell you what I felt. So I want to say from the start, I thought Marissa Abella does not deserve to be shot down for anything in this film. I think she was really strong, really powerful, gave it everything, working with a really quite pedestrian script yeah. and an appallingly constructed story. I thought the storytelling was diabolically bad. And that's not actually about how she even necessarily covered the scenes. Mm. I thought the linking between moments, huge swathes of time, and when I say time, that's what film does, you jump from time to time. But huge swathes of time where the most important stuff was happening. So in order to denote that she'd gone down again, we simply always got a wide shot of an interior with a table full of debris.
Exactly. Well, like you said, it was actually always like they were just ticking the box, like, oh, she's in LA, oh, she's here,
they didn't,
oh, she's
there. Yeah, Amy Winehouse's tour trip.
Yeah, because having watched the documentary, the moments that they picked out, it's interesting what you say, Mark, because I think you're right. I think they got the key moments, but I was able to fill the whole of the rest of the story in because I'd watched the documentary.
Right, that's interesting, yeah.
So it's again, I think they cheated massively
yes.
by just saying just through her eyes, because the screenwriter said she adored Blake. This is how it would have looked to her. Well,
right.
That's not really very fair to say that you're in somebody else's mind and actually, you know, that Tyler, the best friend again, said, it, you know, she adored Blake.
Yeah.
And Blake loved her.
Mm.
And he said, and I really like Blake.
Mm.
And he said, he did get overblamed.
But the thing is with Blake, like, I in no way wanted, it's not that I wanted the film to, like, paint him out to be the bad guy, because yes. I don't think he's the bad guy. I think they were both addicts and they're both messed up. They're both messed up and they both were toxic for each other in different ways. But I just had a problem with it making him seem like he didn't like there was kind of no, when you see any photos of like Amy Winehouse and Blake together, they look just as ill as each other. They look just as you know, they're both
it's a sort of Sid and Nancy thing, isn't it?
And he just looked the same throughout, like he just looked
just pause us all, he looked like Dermot O'Leary from This Morning.
Don't take my line, that's my line.
That was my line.
I looked over to my friend and went, oh my God, he's a bit like a good-looking Dermot O'Leary.
He was, the photographs of them in Miami, it was a promotional shot for This Morning.
I mean, he was a really good actor.
Oh, he was fantastic.
The look was so miscast. I mean, again, my friend turned to me and she went, don't even fucking look like an addict.
See,
they've done
well, that's
important. I agree with. But him playing Blake, I was so... Okay, I was really scared about this film. I had all my fears about it just because I was like... I just don't get making a biopic out of Amy Winehouse's life. I just don't think it would deliver. And I think that the Amy Winehouse documentary did everything already. You don't need to really do anything else with her life, in my opinion. So I had like so many fears about this film. One thing I was like, right, that's the one thing that will get me through the doors and maybe make the film all right, was the fact that he was playing Blake.
And then he was given the most terrible writing. Oh yeah, I've been in here, and what it is my therapist says that we're toxic codependents.
Yeah,
and now I'm going.
All the acting was wasted on the terrible script, like, because I think genuinely I thought everybody in there, apart from Amy Winehouse's first boyfriend,
oh my God, that first scene
I thought
where she ditched him,
oh my God,
that was another moment. You see, these were two strikes. There were two strikes in almost the first 15 minutes, and I was like,
when he comes into her bedroom, like, should we just sit down and listen to the carpenters? But even then, that was really bad writing. I don't know if that actually...
Well, yeah, that was the beginning of making her look like a sex maniac. Bitch, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what
I was going to say is, like, if I really think about it, all of the acting in the film, I don't think any of the acting was bad.
Every
single actor was let down by the script and the director.
Even the actress that plays her mum, who I think is a fantastic actress.
Which is sensational.
I loved her in that comedy drama we saw recently. You know, a line... You've got an actress of that calibre and you can't write something.
Well, you've got an actor of the calibre of Eddie Marson.
Yeah.
And he is so good. And all I felt, and I'm not saying this is what happened, but what I felt, and if this is what it makes you feel, it may as well have achieved that. Because what I felt was with each line his character, her dad Mitch, delivered, I couldn't help but feel these were all very strategically placed, very low-key lines where he'd say things like, under his breath, I didn't know that. I didn't know she wanted that. I didn't know it was this bad. I didn't know. No, no, no. I'm sure it was all of those things, and I'm sure it's very like him. I know you've met, and I've seen interviews.
No, no, in that it's a denial.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a denial. But what the way it worked in the film was him absolutely curating no blame, no responsibility, and actually,
I don't agree. I think he hit the price. I think her friend begged him to do something, and then he turned to her and said, "Oh, you will?" And she said, "No." And he went, "All right." I think he looked the whole time like a dad that just didn't want to know, didn't want to hear it. I do.
That's interesting. I didn't see it.
Like no, that. I didn't see it like that at all.
You no, you did, but it's interesting.
Because that crack pipe, if most parents would have gone in and gone, now.
Well, he has a go at her about the spliff earlier.
Everyone's been bloody telling Everyone's been bloody telling me, and you've kept saying that you're not. That's what I've got. And he slipped it into his pocket so he wouldn't have to deal with it. It was denial.
That's interesting. I saw him slipping it into his pocket out of sadness, and he knew he couldn't go there.
No,
and I thought it was more about he popped it in his pocket like, oh my God, it's this bad. I've got proof to say to her. That's how it came across.
And all the...
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, no, yeah. I promise you. That's how I felt the pipe went into his pocket.
I think he embodied Mitch very well.
Yeah, he did.
I thought he... That aura about him, the energy came across. I thought the acting was great. But the way the script, the way the lines that he delivered, the very few lines that he delivered, where they were placed and the way they were delivered, which I'm sure was how he was told to do it, was so like
strategic.
It didn't sit right with me. It was strategic, but I mean, in a way of making him look very like.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying about the point.
Film, you've got a whole audience that will all hear things in a different way. So I heard that in that way. I suppose I'm looking at it from a parent's point of view that if I found a crack pipe in your bedroom, I'd be running downstairs going, "What the fuck are you doing? You want crack?"
Don't know if you would.
But. What?
No, we would probably want to talk about it first, and it would go into... My thing on that is, it was rapidly followed by him suddenly standing, sitting in the Cafe Soho opposite, you know, Ronnie Scott's on Frith Street, and she goes, "I want to go..."
No, it wasn't rapidly, it was quite a gap. It was not rapidly.
It wasn't that long.
But anyway, the big, big lie here is she never said, "I want to go to rehab."
No, and he certainly didn't.
All about Mitch running her straight to rehab.
Did you know? I think she did in the second time she went to rehab. She went, "I think I need to go." She said something.
Oh.
Or like it was posed to her, and that time she went, "Yeah, you're right, I do." There was the second time, the proper time she went to rehab, she was compliant.
No, but Tyler, her best friend, said she never said, "I want
to go." No, it's never done like that.
Which is a different thing. And for me, and then I'll finish this, I hated the scene of her underneath a tree in rehab,
writing
a song. I thought that was so cute, that moment.
There were many moments like that. I found the stuff on Primrose Hill. I found the delivery of her lines. I tell you the things that I felt I didn't get, which I did get just in the audio, because much of the original documentary does that. It's found footage, isn't it? It's archived. It's also interview chat with her. I thought what was quite sensational for me when I came out of the film at the end, I thought, wow, I've come out and I've not actually felt anything emotional. I've got no sense of the absolute cracked beauty of her art, of her life, of her love even. Everything about her story was screaming for A Star Is Born treatment, and it shows you, a film like A Star Is Born shows you can do this stuff, keep it mainstream, keep it a bit cliched at times, that doesn't matter. There was no authenticity.
Single moment of authenticity or rawness, which is what Amy Winehouse was. So why would it not be authentic or raw or any of that? This is beyond me. Literally drove me mad.
I think it's an astonishing achievement to make a film about Amy Winehouse, not that's bad, which is what I was expecting, but it's more of an achievement to make a film that was...
mediocre.
Yes.
I genuinely, my way of summing it up, it was lazy directing, it was lazy writing. It was lazily done. And how can you cover a story, like, you know, make... something out of a story like that about somebody like her and do it with that much disrespect. It was lazy.
And I also think much more important for me, actually, and what I was really surprised by was, and again, I'm not necessarily saying this was its agenda or even what it was trying to do. I came out of it feeling like I felt about other sort of starlets or tragic stories of famous people who died. It felt very much at the end, I felt I'd been told a story here that she was really in control or responsible for all of her own demise. She was responsible for her drinking. She was, when you mentioned the thing about being sort of like sex, you know, she was the one who was up. It made her culpable for everything that went wrong in her life. Absolutely. And probably the biggest villain that was done in the most kind of obvious way were the paparazzi. And, you know, that was kind of
trite. Move out of the way, come on, move out of the way.
And then, the ballet shoe.
That shot of the ballet shoe. And as Lisa, my friend, said, didn't even have blood on it. That's almost an iconic. That is an iconic image.
Her blood
those slippers, honest to God, from like a mum's like
POV as well, like your child. It's like, it's still like your baby, and like she's in such a state with this fella. The two of them are just so fucked up and messed up. They're bleeding, his face is bleeding. He's cut, they're both self-harm. Her feet, she's got no idea. And they pan, take all the trouble to pan down to an almost clean belly
shoot.
It was so weird, wasn't it?
I tell you right now, this for me, I felt the really cynical hand of rewriting the past, removing all of the kind of difficult, awkward bits, simplifying everyone's roles, not getting any sense really of the damage that will have been caused by the fundamental part of her life, which is her mum and dad's split and her overdependence on her nan. Incidentally, Leslie Manville, I thought was great.
But also, the thing is, her friends were massively important to her.
Where were the friends? Where were any of her relationships? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Where were any of her relationships?
Where were they?
So that was just
people,
awful.
Like the friendships.
Because they couldn't write the multi characters. That's what it was.
Because it was lazy writing.
She was a
young, vibrant girl, living in Camden, living
always
in
Barnes, surrounded all by her mates. People.
So we got a couple of shots with her girlfriends in clubs. And that was it. But she was
and then
very
her friend,
intense.
Like, stop being sick, I've got work in the morning.
I just didn't like it. I found it deeply discomforting that in a sense the men were let off the hook.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
wasn't let off the hook.
No, not totally.
She was the only one who wasn't let off
and
the hook.
And she was responsible for every... There was a moment in there, believe it or not, where I felt that they were actually making out she was responsible for poor old Blakey Wakey Wakey being the mess.
Yeah.
And I was just how have they twisted this round?
But
why
I do
they?
Remember when Blake went into prison and he came out sober and then she wasn't. Because it made out like he came out, got sober, and she got sober straight away. And I remember at the time thinking, wow, there you go. The guy that introduced her to the drugs is now sober and she's left with the mess. And we all know situations like that.
Yes.
But on the point of addiction, because I do think she was an alcoholic before she took the drug. And as we know a lot about addiction, it's just your chosen drug. So they were both addicts when they met, but he's had to be first-class drugs and hers happened to be alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
So they were in that beautiful disaster situation. They were drawn to each other. They were both charismatic, you know, electric with each other. And actually, one of my favourite scenes was the pool scene.
What were they first met? And then they played pool. That was my favourite moment in the film.
The charisma was great. It was sexy. Even I kept going, oh my God, it looks like it could be her dad. Oh my God, it's Dermot O'Leary. That shows what a good actor is, because like, he was so like connected with her.
Yeah.
And then I've just got to mention the shot when they have the snob when she comes back to him. Who chooses his nose? His nose.
He was on the side favouring the camera.
So it was a big romantic moment. No, but I'm talking about it from a director's. It was a huge problem. There's nothing wrong with his nose, but his nose had blackheads. It was an older nose. It was an old nose.
This has bothered you.
It did massively, me and my friend.
Mum's most angry about this film, about this one shot of his nose being in the forefront.
You know what it was? Because aside of the fact that it was a toxic relationship, I do think that they had a real love with each other. I did feel sad in the split up moment. And then when she runs back to him, because something I loved about Amy was she didn't have any shame for the way she felt about him. She never seemed to hide that. It was quite extraordinary because there was no masking how she felt about him. Every time, there he is, she was always just like, just, and she runs to him. She doesn't even think, because he said before in the scene, I don't know if she'd come back to me. She gets a phone call, she runs to him, and you're like, you know, for a moment, I'm suspended in cinema. She runs to him, and there he is standing there, all cool and gorgeous. And then we get a zero close-up of his nose.
Yeah, but you've just kind of explained why this film is so unforgivable. Because I see all of that as it almost taking away her ability to make any sane, sensible choices.
Yeah.
What I wanted, it's a little bit like, there was another film I saw a few years ago where there was something that happened in it. It was as it happened in real life. And I didn't have a problem with the fact they were showing something that had happened about a relationship. But what the filmmaker hadn't taken the time to do was show us why such an unbelievable relationship would have happened. And I think that what we got was just Notting Hill-esque shots in Camden of her running up to pub windows, running into pubs and finding him at the same place where he's always at the same
drinking her bottle of vodka.
She becomes the disenfranchised one who's a bit of a stupid flippity gibbet. Yeah. Hang on, is this really the woman who stands? Oh, hang on, this is the woman who stands on stage and the only reason she knows how to engage with the fucking audience is because we've seen the scene because Mitch told her even that. What was she responsible for herself?
Nothing.
Well, actually, to be fair, though, Mitch tried to tell her and she walked out of the record company and told him and everyone else to fuck off.
She didn't perform a much ever again.
Yeah.
Back to Black Album.
It's interesting. There are little parked details. And I'm telling you right now, this is all about getting the theatrical musical on the West End. This, you can see this on stage. And I feel that's what's been
involved. Well, not happen. Amy Winehouse musical next.
Okay, well, let's go up to sum up and score. Can I give mine?
Can I do one thing quickly? Because I saw something on TikTok, and it was just somebody, just some girl who had seen the film, and she'd just written her opinion on it. But there was like a thing that she said in it that I was going to remember it, but I've forgotten it. But I just want to quickly find it.
Whilst you find it, I'll share with you. The Independent described it as being, it had the production values of EastEnders matched with the karaoke singing of every bar in London. I personally think Marissa Rabella, I think she was really strong and she really anchored it. And thank God for her, really, because I think she pulled it up above what it was.
Maybe she should have taken that part.
No, no.
It's just this bit. It goes, with so many issues and so many negatives and so many blank spots, Back to Black simply shouldn't have been made. There is already the argument that Winehouse's tragic death was too recent to be dramatised. But as Sam Taylor-Johnson handles it with laziness and disinterest, simply rehashing the bad without adding anything of value to the conversation. Mm-hmm. This film is an insult to the subject it claims to herald. And I think that's so true. Mm-hmm. Like, there was all this laziness and then, like, none of the value of it. Like, it just felt she was trying to tick all of the room. She was damaged, tick. Where she was a bit, in love, tick. Yeah. Where she went to LA and recorded that song, tick. Mm. When she got sober just before she died, sing a little sing song in your mirror, tick.
Yes. Like, when she had bulimia, she was sick once.
Toilet,
when she was broken by her mum and dad's marriage, she stands outside the door and goes, come in, Dad, go on, come in, go on. Mm. There's no love, I'm taking Sarah to her mum's, and that's it. But then I filled in everything that I knew about the divorce and how it impacted
me. It gave me no insights at all.
Despite setting it up as a movie about the singer, opening and closing with quotes like, I want people to hear my voice, or I want to be remembered for me, Taylor-Johnson regularly chooses to ignore essential moments in Winehouse's journey to get to the romance or her tragic downfall faster. Mm. Most glaringly, there is a vast black hole where the height of her success is, seeing only a snippet of her recording of the track Back to Black. Mm. The entirety of her musical career and artistic process is omitted, with her achievements being regulated to unimportant footnotes.
Entirely. Wow,
I agree. They just hoovered all of the kind of the gritty, the interesting, the difficult, the genius that comes out of trauma. You know, I just kept thinking, why is she? Why was she as good as she was? I came out of this film thinking, why did I like her as much as I did? I need to go and see the Amy film.
We then spent the whole car journey back listening to Amy's songs to remind ourselves that this was nothing what that film just made her seem like.
She was a brilliantly difficult young woman. Yes. I love difficult women. Yeah. And to reduce a difficult woman to just a broken woman that just kept making mistakes all her life. Fuck you.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to score it. If I was to score this, I know Nads doesn't do scores, I will give this, for Marissa Abella, I will give this 30 out of 100.
Wow. Mm. You know, Kiki gave it a 2 out of 10.
Did she? 2 out of 10? Oh, that's 20 out of 100. Okay, that's not too far.
As we've now seen, like, there's so many people that still haven't seen the Amy documentary, and I think she's still so misunderstood, and people still don't really know who she really was. They only really see the end of her life. So that really bothers me in itself. So I was scared that this movie was going to portray her in that kind of a light. And I'm really upset that it did, because I feel like it didn't champion any of the great things about her, I felt. Mm. It just felt like it tried to glamorize her, just her weaknesses. You didn't really see her strengths at all. This film made me really angry. But what I will say again is that I think the actress has been just really wrongfully treated. It's such a hard and intimidating role to take on. And I think she did it was a really beautiful performance. The only problem was the nobody else involved in the movie did her any good with the writing, with the directing, with the way that they wanted to portray Amy. I think that's what, and I just think it's really unfair that all of the blame and all of the hatred is falling onto her. Mm. And I think she's the least responsible for that mess. Mm. So I think I'd give it a 25.
Okay.
Out of 100. And the only reason it's that high would be because I think the actors did well, considering what they were given.
I don't do numbers because I can never work it out. But so what I do is, would I recommend it to a friend to see? And what I would say, so there'd be some people that I would say, yeah, go along and see it, because they're not particular fans of hers, and it's okay on a wet Wednesday. But what I would say is, watch the documentary. But even then, you know, we don't really know. These are people that are taking and putting things together. Because interestingly, a number of her friends have said, we just wish she'd made
the autobiography so people could have really known. And they don't mention the documentary. So, you know, who knows? But for me, I would definitely say if you really want to know about her, watch the documentary. Because there's so much real footage.
One other thing I'll add that I hate. Obviously, I loved all of the music that they used when it was her songs or songs that Amy loved and listened to. But I think, like, the original score is so bad.
Right.
They're, like, actual soundtrack. Mm. That first song that plays and the very first shot, which is a really bad slow-mo of her running.
Yes.
From up here.
Oh, yes.
And they had some, like, twinkly, god-awful music that was just, like...
Yeah,
I did notice that. And I was like, oh my god.
Did you nearly cry?
And it's like Amy Winehouse's song, and me and Mr. James, she goes, what kind of fuckery is this? She fucking said that. She says,
I have to say, I think so much of the transitional stuff, the camera, it was so uninspired in its coverage. It was uninspired and actively lazy in the way it leapt across time. And I just thought it ticked the boxes. As I said, if there was a Tourette with an Amy Winehouse sort of what's it called? Beehive. And it said, follow me. It literally took you on a journey around everywhere they had to go to and pay some kind of reference to. And I think it's unforgivable the way in which the two blokes come out of this like heroes. And she comes out of it, a bit of a kind of chaotic mess, all responsible for everything that went wrong. That's how I saw it. It's unforgivable to me.